In early February, the Ontario government announced they were restructuring OMERS, the pension plan of many public sector workers across the province. CUPE, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, said the changes would make it impossible for workers to ever negotiate improvements to their pensions while forcing them to pay for, quote, platinum-plated benefits for police and firefighters. By February 9th, the media was reporting that an overwhelming 93% of CUPE members had voted to strike if the bill passed. According to the media, a wildcat strike by over 100,000 public sector workers seemed virtually guaranteed. A week later, the tone had changed dramatically. News reports started saying that the strike had little support among members, and that many CUPE locals wouldn't strike at all. When the bill did pass on February 22nd, CUPE called off the strike. The Toronto Star reported that they had won nothing. The story just didn't add up. Did CUPE really win so little? If so, why did they not strike when they had 93% support? To try to find out what really happened, I spoke with Fred Hahn, the second vice president of CUPE Ontario.
Well, first of all, media reports aren't always 100% accurate. So we did do strike votes across the province. We did them regionally. But the way that our structure works is that those regional meetings are for leadership and for activists and locals. But locals also have to go back and do individual strike votes in their own local unions. We're quite proud of this system that we have in CUPE of local autonomy, where locals get to make those decisions for themselves. So those 93% strike votes that were reported in the media were from regional meetings. And in the vast majority, those regional meetings reflected what happened in local unions. In fact, we had well over 600 of our locals across the province who had voted quite solidly, some more than 93%. We had several 100% strike votes in local unions with rank and file members. And there were certainly pockets of places where people were 100% clear, right, that they wanted and were willing to go on a strike, not only for one day, but for longer than that if necessary, to actually have the bill not pass in the legislature. There were all kinds of problems with the legislation. Part of the challenge for us as an organization is that we also had locals who voted not to go on strike. And that happens, you know, for a variety of reasons. It was a relatively small number of locals, considering we had well over 600 who voted in favor.
How many voted against?
At this point, we think there's probably less than 80 that did it. However, you know, as media reporters can focus on one part, right? So, yep, there were locals who voted not to go. You betcha. The vast majority voted to do that if necessary. And part of the challenge, I think, is that the entire time there were negotiations with government about how were there ways in which we could make changes or restructure or do something different with the bill that would meet the needs of CUPE members. In fact, it's a bit, certainly the campaign in a public way, certainly around taking strike action, started a couple months ago. But really, the campaign's been going on for some time, right? In fact, long before the election of the Liberal government. There's been a campaign around pension fairness, around having control over the pension plan, around the administration of the pension plan, around being able to have some control as workers who contribute to that plan with our deferred wages to say what happens to those deferred wages, how they're invested, all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of actually, it is a bit, you know, you want to focus on the last few months, and the media certainly does that. But it's been a much longer-ranging campaign for us. One of the other things, you know, I think that for us we were facing is that pensions is not a very easy issue to explain in short and concise ways. It's very like there are all these kind of complicated pieces. Which is part of what we were saying about the legislation at the beginning of the last 2 months, to say, look, there are so many pieces and problems here that we're worried that if the bill passes as it is, it will be impossible to kind of fix, right? A number of those pieces did get addressed, though, in the last part of the campaign. And I think it's because the vast majority of our locals did not only come to those regional meetings and give strike votes, strike mandates there, but actually go back and achieve strike votes in their locals, that government was actually pressured to make changes, and they did make a bunch of significant changes.
The review that you did get is not binding, right? In the sense that they do the review they discovered that you were right, the province is still not obligated to change anything.
Yeah, the language actually doesn't say it's binding or the government must act on the recommendations, right?
Right.
But it does say that they'll give the, I believe it's that they will give it serious consideration. What we understand, right, is that the language of serious consideration, the way that it's been arbitrated and dealt with in the courts, is that it isn't serious consideration to just say, oh yeah, that review happened, thanks, and that's it, right? If the review finds things, and we're confident that it will find things that show that the setup of the pension plan isn't proper and it ought to be changed, and it makes recommendations around concrete change, we believe that we now have a mechanism through that language to be able to continue to challenge government, either in courts or through arbitration, right, around the language of serious consideration.
According to the Toronto Star, when the I guess not in legislation, but when the review was originally talked about on the weekend,
yeah.
Sid Ryan at the time said they're offering stuff that's pretty meaningless. Is the only change from then till what actually happened that it's in legislation that it will have to happen, have review?
Well, not only that, that it will have to happen, so that's certainly there, and that it's enshrined in legislation. In fact, what the government actually said, right, just after the agreement was, well, we didn't get them. They didn't get anything we weren't already going to do.
Mm.
Well, from our perspective, that's spin. Because quite frankly, saying you're going to do a review is one thing. Saying you're going to do a review, here's how the person is appointed that's going to do the review. Here's exactly what that person is going to look at. Here's how they're going to conduct it. And here's the fact that there has to be serious consideration given to any review, any of the recommendations that come out of that review, is very different from saying we're going to do a review anyway. That could have been done by someone appointed by the ministry, a functionary within the ministry. It could have been a perfunctory review. It could have been done by the OMERS board itself. Who knows? We have no guarantee of any of those things. Now they're clearly articulated, right?
How do you think members feel about all this? I mean, people, as of the night of, thought they were going to be going on a wildcat strike, suddenly found out they weren't. I've talked to people who felt that they didn't really ever know what was going on in any detail. What do you think member involvement and attitudes towards this have been?
I think that, like any large organization like our union, there are probably a range of ways in which members are feeling about it, right? I know that some members feel disappointed, right, that we weren't actually able to get something more concrete. Or, for example, stop the bill from passing. There are members who are massively relieved and who feel like, thank goodness we got something and I didn't have to go on strike, right? And there's probably everything in between. Part of the challenge we had is communicating all the details around it and helping people to see, again, pensions is definitely something that a worker relies on being there for them when they retire. People understand they contribute to it. People understand that it ought to be there. People understand that it's an important feature of their retirement kind of plan, right? But the details around the administration of a pension plan is not something that the vast majority of people know any detail about. And for us to be able to take those very complicated details and communicate them in a very quick way to literally 100,000 people, right, across the province of Ontario, was a massive challenge for us, right? That in some ways we met, you know, I think quite well. In other ways, we didn't meet as well as we would like to have, right? So, you know, how do members feel about it? Lots of different ways. But I think that overall, what we're trying to help people to see is what we did and what people were willing to do did, in fact, make change.
Do you think you could have won even more if you had gone on strike?
Well, you're asking me a crystal ball question. I don't have a crystal ball. But I'll tell you, there were a couple things we were concerned about. It's a majority government, quite ideologically set in their ways, number one. They had induced closure on debate with the bill, right? It was going to pass into law. There were questions, and they were from the leadership team, like from the executive board level, about, so if we go on strike, when does that stop if something's already been law, right? One of the commitments we made to people, and it's what any responsible trade union would do, is to say to people, look, we want to be able to organize and to mobilize and use whatever weapons we have, right, to make sure that we can get the best possible thing. But we're also not going to lead people over a cliff, right? We're not going to say, look, we're going to go out on an indefinite strike forever and ever when something's already a piece of legislation that will be impossible to change, right? Or not impossible, but really it will take a much longer time, right? So we were constantly trying to balance how do we be able to make sure that people understand how important this is for them and for their retirement and for sort of pensions in general, because it wasn't really, we think, just about the OMERS pension plan. It's actually, I think, connected to a much broader thing that's happening with public pensions, right? But how do we say to people, look, let's mobilize, let's use every weapon in our arsenal, but let's make sure that if we can get something that will help to safeguard our members in the best way possible that we can get at this time, right, then we'll have to make decisions as we go about how far we're going to go, right? And the leadership group that was empowered by the members to make those decisions felt like at the 11th hour this was a good enough deal to and a good enough arrangement in total in terms of all of the amendments that happened that we could call off using the weapon of the strike.
You mentioned that this is part of a broader thing that's happening to public pensions. Can you go into more detail?
Yeah, I mean, part of the challenge, right, is that we've seen this, and workers have seen this for some time, whether it be the steel workers in Hamilton and the stuff that's happened when they're dealing with a private corporation and the rating of their pension plans and some protection of that. There's massive pressure by the corporate right wing to say, we don't need pension plans. All you need is an RRSP, right? You know, we just went through the end of, you know, RRSP season. You can't go anywhere without being inundated with how you should contribute to your RSP. And there's nothing out there about why public pensions are important. What's out there is the corporate right wing saying, you know, maybe we don't need pensions anymore. Like, maybe the Canada Pension Plan really isn't such a good idea anymore, right? So while we're having a fight about pension plans, right, it's in this broader context of what's happening by neoliberal governments like the Liberal government in Ontario, right, that has an agenda that is, we think, actually quite anti-worker, quite pro-professional. If you're a teacher or you're a lawyer or you're a firefighter, you're okay by us. But if you clean a hospital or you clean a school board or you pick up garbage, you're not a professional, and maybe you're not as important, right? And maybe your jobs can be contracted out. Maybe we can get out of the business of doing that work. And maybe your pensions aren't so important. So, yes, this was a very focused thing that happened over a couple weeks on a particular bill, on a particular pension plan. But it's happening in this much broader context, right? And so we were prepared to engage in a battle, and our members were prepared, vast majority, to engage in that battle. But we, you know, we would have done that in large part on our own. There weren't other unions who were saying, if KIPI goes on strike, we'll go out with them.
Why is that?
I think in many ways this was a KIPI fight, right? It's vast majority of our members are in this plan. Sure, there are other unions that have members in the plan. But in many ways, they have very, very small numbers, right? Number one. Number two, there were a couple of, you know, unions and or associations, like police, you know, have associations. They're not unions. But they actually had some benefits from Bill 206 and understandably wanted those benefits for their members, right? It was a very... it was a way of driving a wedge between workers, right? And in some ways, you know, that challenge is one that we weren't able to meet, I think, in a way that was satisfactory, because we weren't able to be able... We were so busy trying to figure out a way to deal with this and trying to communicate those things to our members and set up a plan and try to find a solution that the ability to reach out to other parts of the labor movement and say, like, we need your support in this, didn't happen, right, in the way that it might have. One of the things that tends to happen, again, in media is you look at, this happened in a two-week period, so what worked, what didn't work, why didn't it happen, and it's like it's over. For us in QP, this is not over. This is in many ways part of a very long campaign that started, as I said, a number of years ago about pension fairness and about pensions in general. And what we have to do is really talk to ourselves and to other parts of labor about solidarity, about how do we move forward together on these issues, right? About how do we deal, because this is not going to, this will happen again. Not necessarily on pensions, but it will happen on a variety of issues, right? And we have to find ways to make sure that we learn from what happened so that the next time we can be stronger and better, right?
How do you make sure that members will be behind it, and how do you mobilize something that will be a strong strike?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a question that we have to answer every day. It doesn't matter whether it's Bill 206 or not, right? Our challenge constantly is finding ways to reach out to members, to inform members, to let people know what it is we're doing, why it is we're doing it, involve them in helping to make decisions about how we move forward, because, you know, for us, we believe strongly that it doesn't matter what position a leader takes if the rest of the organization doesn't agree, which is why our issues around local autonomy are, some would say, you know, they're a weakness for us. Many unions have this ability to be much more centrally controlled. If the leader says we're doing it, we're all doing it, right? In QP, we don't have that, right? And that, again, some might look at as a weakness, but I think actually it makes it a strength, because what it does is it forces us to have to go and have that discussion every time an issue comes up, issue by issue, local by local, member by member, so that people make decisions. And when people make decisions to actually do something, like go on an illegal strike, they've had to think about it and consider it, and they've had to vote themselves, right? Instead of being directed by somebody, this is what we're all doing, right? So while, you know, I will absolutely be the first to say that it is absolutely possible that there are members who didn't have all of the details around these issues, I feel strongly that we can guarantee that we had more members who were more informed than if we were centrally organized and we just told people, this is what you're doing, right?
I wanted to know more about how members were involved in the campaign and strike mobilizing, so I spoke with Doug Mason. Doug's a support service worker at the Adelaide Resource Centre for Women and a member of QP Local 79.
So Fred really emphasizes the importance of keeping members informed and involved in a strike mobilization like this. Do you feel like you were involved and informed as to what was going on?
Well, we were told to come down to this hotel where they're holding this big meeting where you could go vote, and there was also, and we had about an 8-hour timeline there where we could vote, and it happened to be when I was working, and at that vote there was also a sit down for, and it was 4 hours where you could sit down and listen to their side of you know, like, get all the details you needed for whatever you wanted to know, which I thought was very helpful. Unfortunately, I couldn't go to that meeting because I was working, so I went in there and stopped in real quick, and I made my vote. I already had a strong feeling to vote yes, so I did, but it would have been helpful to get a little bit more details. I read as much as I could in the paper, but I didn't really get a lot, and there was a lot of rumors being tossed around of how long it was going to be and when it was going to be, and so, but there really wasn't a lot. I was kind of hearing it from people rather than a direct source. I didn't get an email or anything like that, I don't think, you know what I mean? So, yeah, I felt there was not a lot of information, but maybe there would have been if I was at that 4-hour meeting.
Fred told me that a campaign around this pension has been going on for a long time, that it's even before this bill passed, QP was working on trying to get more control of the pension for members, and that this is just sort of one step. What had you heard about the pension, or what had you seen before this bill?
A couple times I heard people talking about it in passing. That's about it. Not a whole lot. I didn't know anything about it. And a lot of times people don't take the time to know anything about it until it's right in their face, you know, telling you that you're going to go on strike and you're going to lose some money, you know what I mean? But then it was an illegal strike. And I know a lot of people at my work, anyways, weren't really interested in marching or going picketing or anything like that. There were a lot of people were going to stay at work. There was only a few of us that were going to go.
Do you think those people voted yes or no in the strike?
I know a lot of them voted yes, but when it came down to it, it was like, oh, it's an illegal strike, and oh, I can go to work and make some money. You know what I mean? So it's personal choice, sometimes not just what you believe in. I mean, I don't know, if you have people that need to feed their families or whatever, sometimes that's going to take precedence over what you believe in. Everybody believed that I worked with anyways that it wasn't right what was happening. So it was kind of like, yeah, I think we should strike. But then once you realize, because, you know, what, at first we're thinking, well, if we go on strike, we don't get to go to work. You know what I mean? There's not an option to make money. But then there's that option there. It's pretty tempting, right? So,
yeah. In terms of organizing for the strike, communicating or involving you and your coworkers, what do you think that QPE did right, and what do you think they could have done better?
Well, the only information I got on paper about it was the day before where we had to meet. That was about it. Right. So, I mean, but because not everybody has that option to sit down for 4 hours. Some people have to go home and feed their kids. Some people have to be at work. Some people have things to do, you know what I mean? So having it on paper at least would be kind of nice. I didn't see it. Maybe it was out there, but I didn't see it. So that would have been nice, actually.
It's hard to say whether QPE has met the challenge of engaging its members in the struggle against the OMERS restructuring, but it is certain that they'll need to be mobilized as that struggle continues. I asked Fred, where to from here?
Well, it isn't over. Like, part of what we're going into in May, we'll have our provincial convention, and we're now in, as I just said, we're doing sector conferences that lead up to the provincial convention at the end of May. And part of the discussion that we're having is to say to people, look, the stuff on OMERS is not over, right? So Bill 206 is law, a structure is going to be put into place, right? There were some amendments that we were able to get that we're quite pleased with. But we also have to say, and part of what we're recommending to our locals is to strongly consider putting on the bargaining table some of these supplementals that we know that police and firefighters have. One of the things we said, and that clearly resonated not only with our members, but we think with the public and with the media in general, is if all of these workers are in a pension plan, why should one group of them be treated better than another? And if it's the case, and it is, that police and firefighters can go through a municipal structure, get an improvement to their pension plan, not have to have it approved by anyone else, right? And part of what we were saying was, well, if QPE members do that, they have to go through this two-thirds majority vote, which we think will never happen. For us, we need to make sure that it's demonstrated that we're right. So we're going to be asking locals to go and bargain improvements to their pension plans and supplementals, particularly in places where police and fire have supplementals that make their pension plans better, right, in those regions or municipalities, so that we can, number one, make the point around all workers in a plan ought to be treated the same. But number two, we feel confident that when those supplementals come to the OMERS board, right, they're not going to get passed, right, because of this whole two-thirds majority that was set up. So it's not necessarily an exercise in, you know, proving that we were right, but also being able to say to people, we now have a measure of control over this pension plan. And as such, we ought to be able to take that control and say, we want to improve this plan for our members. And the way to do that for us is to bargain that at bargaining tables across the province. And we've got some time to do that, right?
And that was Fred Hahn, the second vice president of QPE Ontario, and Doug Mason, a member of QPE Local 79. This is Dale Whitmore for CKLN 88.1 FM.